The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today via video conference by Judge Meredith and Judge Laurer. And we're here for the matter of Karen R. Shorette versus Dennis McDonough, docket number 22-4698. Counsel for the parties, please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with petitioner's counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor. Douglas Rosinski for petitioner Karen Shorette.
Thank you, Mr. Rosinski. Mr. McNabb.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Mark McNabb for the secretary.
Thank you, Mr. McNabb. And I see you're joined by second chair, Mr. Dustin Elias. Welcome, Mr. Elias.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present their arguments. Mr. Rosinski, I understand you want 10 minutes for rebuttal. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, we will make sure that happens. And Mr. Rosinski, you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. If anything is clear from this docket, it is that if the VA fiduciary program does well for some, it does very, very poorly for others, including Mrs. Shorette, Mr. Shorette, and their family. As evidenced in the cited cases in my the brief, this is not a unique situation, sadly, and it is hard to find something that is more offensive than some of the activities that are undertaken on behalf of this fiduciary program. They continue to burden families facing some of the worst circumstances in their lives with unbelievable burdens that are not within their scope of authority, have never been within the scope of the secretary's authority at all, and then protect themselves with baseless accusations and removals of those family members who dare to challenge decisions on the medical and living conditions of their spouses or other family members. This is not, I repeat, not a unique situation. And Mrs. Shorette pleads with the court to review the entire program, not just the specifics of this program, because they are generic. They are programmatic. If I can draw your attention to a single page document in all of this that has been submitted, I call your attention to an August 12th, 2022 letter to Mrs. Shorette by the Department of Veterans Affairs VA Fiduciary Intake Group. That is attachment F to the September 13th, 2022 secretary submittal. This document says that Mrs. Shorette has requested a written determination of her reinstatement, but that they will not give it to her, that they told her verbally that she won't be reinstated. But further on, it states such request to change a fiduciary must come from the veteran, as a spouse cannot submit that request. That raises some significant issues because it conflicts with the pleadings, other pleadings of the secretary, and indeed the law as pled both in this case and in previous cases. And more importantly, the last paragraph. The fiduciary is willing, meaning the new fiduciary selected by the VA, is willing to assist with home repairs or other needs with the appropriate documentation. The appropriate documentation to include estimates, receipt, and written requests. The hub will decide approval. So for this family, which is stuck 850 miles from their father and spouse because VA refuses to move him as they promised when Mrs. Shorette moved back to Florida because of this misuse, which we will talk about in detail, Now, the fiduciary hub of Indianapolis controls whether she can fix a hole in her roof.
So, Mr.
This is what's wrong.
Mr. Rosinski, you started out with a very wide-ranging statement about you hope that we'll like fix the VA fiduciary system. As far as what Ms. Charette is seeking, can you speak to that for a few minutes? In particular, are you asking or would you be satisfied if this court considered her the 2018 letters that she submitted in response to November 2018 letter appointing Mr. Lane or Mr. Wilson as the fiduciary? Yeah. Would you be satisfied if we considered that a notice of disagreement, Ms. Charette's numerous correspondence within the time period to file a notice of disagreement?
Well, Your Honor, there a qualified yes, because actually reading again over all of the pleadings and secretarial statements and the record as far as we can obtain it, the issue is really Mrs. Charette acting under both the authority of the state as her husband, POA, okay, and as a spouse, two hats, as they said in their last submittal, is actually seeking a decision on reinstatement. It's repeatedly and admitted in the document I said, but in other documents VA has submitted. She wants a decision on reinstatement, not a phone call that says, no, we're not going to reinstate. That is what she's asking for. If they put it, they won't give her that decision. The other decision about the misuse, that was completely favorable to her. Why is she going to file a notice of disagreement with a completely favorable decision? The fiduciary program / secretary has mixed up these issues and said, well, you didn't challenge the appointment. That's right. Okay. The issue is, with all the lack of information, I don't know how she could have appealed the appointment in a timely manner. Information is still coming out. But the bottom line is this. What we would be satisfied with, as you put it, is that an order that the VA decide on reinstatement, not firing the old guy, reinstatement, and if not, under the statutes, explain why that decision is in the interest of the veteran. That is one of the
programs. Mr. Rosinski, as you know, there are some restrictions on our jurisdiction in this area. And to my understanding, we are limited to addressing appointment, removal, misuse of funds type issues. And so how would the reinstatement issue fit under one of those parameters?
Well, it all boils down to the misuse charge determination, which has morphed from a complaint by some medical staffers that Mr. Charette wasn't getting enough hamburgers or the right kind of pants or enough money to carry around in his pocket, to a grand overarching charge that she was stealing his money, putting it in her personal accounts, misusing money, and then all of a sudden it all went away. All of it is wrong. They conceded. But they didn't concede it until another attorney, an Indiana attorney, presented evidence of each and every one of those things being wrong. As a matter of fact, the chronology in this case, which I recommend, shows that it was well over a year after this misuse was presented by a medical staffer demanding the fiduciary hub do something, that before they even talked to her, they stopped paying her benefits or paying his benefits to an account she had access to. So all of this boils down to they made up a misuse charge outside of their jurisdiction and authority, and then they withdrew it, but everything they did in response to it remains in effect. Mr. Charette is stuck 850 miles away. She can't get reinstated. So the decision would be go back to status quo ante. If there was no misuse,
Mr. Vizinski, I was asking whether your request for reinstatement of her as the fiduciary falls under our can fall under our jurisdiction under the parameters.
Yes, Your Honor. We're not asking for an order of reinstatement. We're asking for an appealable decision on her reinstatement because they have never made it. They've admitted in that document that all they did was give her a phone call. So even if they've made it, they didn't notice it properly.
And so is what you're saying that considering the correspondence that she sent to VA after they appointed the new fiduciary, that considering that correspondence as a notice of disagreement with his appointment is not what you're looking for?
That is an alternative. I'm not going to reject that. It is an alternative reading given the total facts here. Yes, she was trying to appeal that, but more importantly, she explicitly was trying to appeal the reinstatement of which she cannot get a decision. Okay, and that is one of the programmatic issues here. And as the secretary or the fiduciary hub admitted in that letter, we know she wants to appeal it. We're not going to decide it. We told her we're not.
Uh-huh. And so I'm getting back to the question I was asking. So how would the reinstatement issue fit into our jurisdictional parameters?
Because the jurisdictional, the misuse was false. It was erroneous. It shouldn't have been done. So that caused this whole scenario of where she is no longer allowed to even operate or exercise her own rights as a spouse. They took everything away from her based on an admittedly, concededly wrong decision. The decision has been removed, rescinded, I suppose, but all of the effects remain. That is arbitrary capricious. If she was adequate before they made up all this misuse stuff, why is she not adequate now? That's the decision. That's the determination of the interest of the veteran, which, to go a little bit further, the other attachment in there says that, oh, the veteran's happy. He says he's great. He doesn't want her back. This is a man who suffers from dementia, who cannot speak for himself. Yet every time that Mrs. Charette disagrees with the VA, they go to this man who they say can't handle his benefits and has to have a fiduciary. And the state of Indiana has appointed a guardian because he can't handle his medical decisions and then does what he wants. So, and if you read...
I understood, Mr. Vizinski. So you are arguing that the reinstatement decision that she wants, that would fall under our jurisdiction.
Absolutely.
Through the misuse provision.
Right. And there's 5701 or, you know, the whole chapter on VA fiduciary program is based on the interest of the veteran. The VA is supposed to operate in the interest of the veteran. They do not document the interest of the veteran served by any of these decisions. Why is a fiduciary necessary if every time the appointed fiduciary disagrees with some VA staffer, they fire her and do what the VA, what the veteran wants? Again, one of the key problems is this is not a true fiduciary. They say it right in their fiduciary program. If you do not do what the VA tells you to do, you will be fired. Why do we have a fiduciary program if the unbelievably acronymed LIAR doesn't want something to happen. Why do we appoint these intermediaries? You have to do what the VA employee says or you get fired. That is a fundamental conflict in this program.
Can I jump in there? Judge Bartley? I just want to see if you're done, Judge Bartley.
Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Rosinsky, if I could just follow up on something Chief was asking about. So in November 2018, the VA sent a letter saying they were appointing a paid fiduciary instead of Mrs. Shorette. And I think what the Chief was getting at is that that same month, the petitioner, through a different lawyer, sent a letter to VA on November 29th, and he captioned it as the attorney for the guardianship, and said VA hadn't explained why they removed her, demanded her reinstatement. If we were to construe that letter as Mrs. Shorette appealing VA's decision in her capacity as the guardian of the veteran, what's the appropriate remedy?
The appropriate remedy is to recognize that as an appeal. But that is a separate issue from the reinstatement. I believe all the issues raised by Mrs. Shorette were adequately attempted to be appealed. There are numerous documents before the court where the VA refused to talk to her after this. It says she's no longer the fiduciary. We will not accept a fraud complaint. We will not accept anything from her. So how is she – now they turn around and say, oh, she should have done this, should have done that. They refused to talk to her. They wouldn't send her reasoning. How are you supposed to appeal a decision where they won't give you the basis?
So counsel, if I could, VA has conceded that in her role as the guardian of the veteran that they did not send her notice of appellate rights of the November 2018 decision appointing the paid fiduciary. And VA has suggested in some of their pleadings that the petitioner could now come in and file an NOD and the period may be told because they hadn't sent her notice of appellate rights. Is that an adequate remedy if she were now to go into VA and submit an NOD?
I think it's some of the relief necessary because, as I said, their next exhibit is that the veteran doesn't want her anymore. He loves his life as it is. And so just by opposing the fiduciary, they're going to throw that in. We also need, more importantly, the issue of reinstatement and why we can't go back to status quo ante, which was working fine for 20 years. Okay. That is the key problem here. Same thing with all these preemptions of all these rights. They've argued that she can represent the veteran, and then they don't allow her to represent the veteran because they don't recognize the state appointments. Where is the preemption to do any of this? That is one of the issues that have been before this court for over a decade. I know because I've raised it. I've raised it in the rulemaking. They have gone well beyond the veteran's benefits. In this case alone, they've challenged medical treatment. They've challenged the details. Ridiculous details. As I said, the woman can't fix her roof without some VA employee in Indianapolis saying it's okay.
So
could
actually follow up on that point. In many of the documents that the petitioner has submitted, she's questioning whether why she's not been receiving, I think it's about $3,200 a month of the veterans benefits that used to go to her to help support her as his dependent. Is she currently receiving any of the veterans' funds to help support her as his dependent?
From my discussions with her, absolutely not. They stopped within a month or two after the phone call from the staff, the medical staff, and it wasn't even for years, months and years later before they even did the, you know, misuse determination. They stopped it. And they won't tell her where it's going. We assume it's going, or I assume it's going to the fiduciary, the new fiduciary. But that fiduciary wasn't appointed at the time that VA stopped paying her. She's been living off savings and is getting ready to go in her IRA to fund day-to-day living expenses because she no longer has access, even though it's part of the original fiduciary agreement that VA waves around that she's violating. It says right in there she's supposed to get, I think it's $2,000 a month for upkeep of her home. And then part of the fiduciary...
Mr. Rosinski, if I could interrupt you there, not only was it part of the agreement, but there is a statute related to this, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And the whole point is that this is an illustration of why we're asking for a bigger picture here, is that these individual fires are all caused from the same source. They go well beyond their ability to manage. And then they turn around and say, the guy you're supposed to be managing doesn't like what you're doing, so they fire you. So if we order them to, the important part is to order them to make written decisions on both of these issues that we can appeal and take wherever we need to go. But the basis for all of this is the important part before the court now. It doesn't do any good, in my view, to put out this fire when they're lighting them all over the place. What about preemption? Why do you appoint a fiduciary who has to do what you say, not what's in the interest of the vet? Make decisions all the time. Replace fiduciaries. Make budgets. Never documenting why it's in the interest of the veteran, which is the basis of the entire program.
Counsel, if so, I could just clarify your response on the $3,200. Sorry, Chief.
Judge Meredith, let me just, let's add 10 minutes.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Go ahead.
On the money that used to go to Mrs. Shorat as a dependent of the veteran that you say is no longer being paid, is that part of the relief that you're seeking through this petition? And if so, how? And in what way could we reach that matter of what funds should be going to her as a dependent?
It's implied in there. We need the relief that's appropriate under the circumstances. If the VA wants to enforce this fiduciary agreement down to the nit and twiddle, then it needs to follow it itself and to pay to Mrs. Charette exactly what it's supposed to pay. The issue is we don't know anything. They have rejected every request for information. They say we can't. There's a misuse. And then they say later, we're not allowed to talk to you, repeatedly, in writing, because of this misuse. And this is a pattern. Why is the VA fiduciary group making medical decisions, making house improvement decisions? Where did the money go? Okay, the money may be with this fiduciary, but he's been told, I assume, because he won't talk, not to talk to us. It's happened before. You know, just even if she was misusing the money, she's still the spouse of the veteran, and state law gives her rights as the spouse. And yet the fiduciary program refuses to talk to spouses, not just her, any spouse who they determine is just not worthy of a response.
Mr. Rosinski, it would be helpful if you were a little bit more concrete, I have to say. So it sounds like what you might be saying in response to Judge Meredith's question is, would there be authority for the court to address her numerous complaints to VA that they are no longer paying for her household expenses? The current fiduciary is no longer paying for her expenses. That could be her as the guardian of the veteran. That is her complaint as to a misuse of funds. I mean, we have to, in order to have jurisdiction here, potential jurisdiction, we have to characterize this either as an appointment, a removal, or a misuse of funds, you know, one of those. You've got to kind of corral it into that. And so is that what you're trying to argue?
I think, despite my inability to focus, I suppose, because there's so many things wrong here, let me go back to the top. The fiduciary program, as applied here, has exceeded its statutory authority. That is a finding the court can make in any case, because they're interfering with medical and lifestyle decisions. Secondly, she has identified this, and she is challenging her the failure to reinstate her once the reasons for removing her were proven false. To me, that's either under any of the three issues that you stated. It can be misuse. They challenged her under misuse, and they misused the misuse process. And yet the penalties are still being applied. Secondly, the appointment of the new individual was not proper because they did not identify why it was specifically in the interest of this veteran that this individual be appointed under the circumstances. If they had, and the basis was misuse, then that would be an issue of improper appointment because they based it on the wrong facts. Third, they are violating the fiduciary agreement with her. So that's under her appointment jurisdiction, is that she agreed to do things, whether it's appropriate or not, and they agreed to pay this money in this way. She was properly administering that, and suddenly it's gone. What does the fiduciary agreement with the new person say? Did they take that away from him because of her misuse? She can't use any of her husband's funds for issues? We don't know. That is the problem with them not providing the fiduciary file, even though it was requested in December. Those issues should be in there. But for your jurisdictional purposes, all three of those reasons give you jurisdiction under Freeman and general jurisdictional issues to at least order the secretary to make these decisions, provide the basis, and make it an appealable final decision. So if they do come up with an adverse, continue this adverse action, we can bring it to the court's attention.
Mr. Rosinski, if I may, I'd like to revisit the issue regarding the disagreement questions that Chief Bartley and Chief Meredith raised. That is, as you know, the Secretary's most recent response, while perhaps conceding that the petitioner could file an NOD right now, does not acknowledge that the November 2018 letter from the petitioner's attorney, Mr. Wilson, is in fact a notice of decision. Do you have a response specific to that issue as to whether or not, in petitioner's opinion, that 2018 letter from Mr. Wilson is an NOD? And if so, can you please walk the court through your thinking on that?
Yes, Your Honor. I do believe it is reasonably interpreted as a notice of disagreement in VA terms. It clearly expresses disagreement with the basis for the misuse decision, and her removal. And it has been proven correct. They've conceded that each one of the misuse issues was wrong, okay? And each individual issue was incorrect, and it was rebutted in that document. That caused, you look at the chronology, that resulted in the letter you're speaking about. Why that it is not, as I read it, the VA has interpreted that, well, you could disagree with the misuse decision because that's what came out next. But that's not it. That was a favorable decision. They didn't, and it was as Mrs. Surrett herself said, it was a partial decision. She wanted both. And the reinstatement decision has never been made, at least not in accordance with processes of a written notice and notice of appellate rights. The issue that you're speaking of here is a notice of disagreement reasonably interpreted, of which the secretary, as you said, the secretary has essentially conceded that and didn't provide adequate notice. But that does not get us to, you know, status quo ante, which seems to be, unless they have a reason, what we should go back to.
Just to be clear, the secretary's concession seems to be that the petitioner could file in the future a notice of disagreement. But as I understand the secretary's most recent response, he continues to have the position that the 2018 letter, November 2018 letter from Mr. Wilson is not, and of course we'll get an opportunity to hear from Mr. McNabb on this issue, but as I understand it, just so we're clear about the concession, it seems to be that the petitioner could file an NOD regarding the removal as the fiduciary, but that the correspondence to date does not constitute something that the court could construe as an NOD.
I agree with how you characterized it. I will also add that it's, I believe it's confusing and internally inconsistent because they seem to be swapping or conflating the two separate issues here. The misuse decision to reverse the misuse was correct and completely favorable. Why in any name would you appeal something out of that? Secondly, the secretary's response doesn't recognize the issue of reinstatement. And that's actually where I have changed my position from, I think there's a third answer to the first question that the court asked, in that Mrs. Charette, as Mrs. Charette, is trying to appeal the decision, implicit or whatever, that she has not been reinstated.
Mr. Vizinski, let me take your time is out. Let me just take a poll of the judges here. Judge Meredith, do you have further questions?
I just have one quick question.
And Judge Lauer, do you have some follow up questions as well?
No, thank you, Judge Barton.
Okay. Let's add 2 minutes.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead.
I just had one question on, before you entered an appearance for the petitioner, she had filed a motion seeking injunctions, an injunction against VA that had to do with a claim for disability benefits that was filed on behalf of the veteran. Is the petitioner continuing to pursue that motion for an injunction?
Well, I think it's still available, and, you know, we will take, yes, a short answer, we would, in lieu of the proper decision-making under the proper standards, we need to stop what the VA is doing. So the motion to do that, I would suggest, is still before the court. Depending on what the court orders here, we could withdraw that, but it's not the focus of what we're doing here right now.
And Mr. Vizinski, a follow-up question to that. Has she pursued anything down below in her capacity as the legal guardian of the veteran with regard to the 2022 decision on VA benefits? That she didn't really seem to know what that was about. Has she asked them down below?
She has been rejected at all outreach. She's been told she's subject to a misuse. Some of the documents I sent last night, she's subject to a misuse. It's still on the books. At the time, they won't talk to her. So she has no idea. That's part of the issue here, is she's lost complete touch with what's going on with her husband. VA will not talk to her at all, give her any status.
Okay, thank you. Judge Meredith, any further questions?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Vizinski. And Mr. McNabb, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm, as noted, Mark McNabb, representing the secretary and also present on behalf of the secretary is Deputy Chief Counsel Dustin Elias. The secretary respectfully asserts that the petition should be denied because it has not been filed in pursuit of the right to appeal the appointment of a VA fiduciary pursuant to Freeman or to 38 CFR 13600 that's been initiated below. Petitioner wears two hats here and has different rights and roles and different rights in each role. If this matter is construed as a request from the former fiduciary, she had either as for her to be returned or otherwise, she has no appeal rights to the board and the petition should be dismissed. Alternatively, with respect to the beneficiary's rights, We concede in our most recent pleading that the November 2018 appointment of the fiduciary was not mailed to her as the guardian, and that decision, while she was made aware of it as the fiduciary, the copy of the decision that contained her appellate rights or the veteran's appellate rights was not sent to her, although it was sent to the veteran and to his service organization. But as no notice of disagreement has been filed with the 2018 decision, the requirements of petition have not been met. Petitioner does not have a clear and undisputable right to entitlement, does not lack an adequate means to obtain the requested relief, and has not exhausted her administrative remedies by filing a notice of disagreement and going through that appeals process. Petitioner has pointed to no other action that may be appealed to the board and ultimately to the court that is impacted by VA action or inaction. VA fiduciary was most recently appointed for the veteran in November 2018. And as noted, petitioner wears two hats in these proceedings and has different rights in each role. It's not always been clear, even in the pleadings before this court, which hat she's wearing when she speaks and makes requests.
Well, Mr. McNabb, I have to say, it's not very compelling to hear you faulting the petitioner in this case when VA is not faultless. It's quite maddening to read what's happened to her. And so I guess I'll just start with my first question. So there, she was accused of misuse of funds. She was the legal guardian and she was the VA fiduciary, the state appointed legal guardian and the VA fiduciary, and was accused of misuse of funds and was, while the misuse of funds determination was being made, VA appointed another fiduciary. Then she was cleared of the misuse of funds. So is there no procedure for VA to go back and reappoint someone who was unfairly charged with misuse of funds? I mean, it seems kind of weird that she has to go through all of these processes to get back in VA's good graces when the fact that she fell out of VA's good graces appears to not be have been her fault at all.
Yes, Your Honor, and this is where the VA error in notice comes into play, which is that she, of course, could have, on behalf of the veteran, appealed the appointment of a new fiduciary. And that's, the route to ask for an appeal here, and that file a notice of disagreement with the appointment or removal, and those are matters that are subject to board appeal.
Right. And so in your supplemental brief, I thought that you had at least a footnote in there indicating that she had communicated within the time period to file an NOD. She never got notice of the this decision in November 2018, but within the time period to file, she had communicated with VA, essentially expressing disagreement. Are you willing to concede for the secretary that her communications were a notice of disagreement with the decision as to the appointment of this new fiduciary?
Well, Your Honor, the November 29th, 2018 letter from her counsel, I think is best read as a complaint about the misuse assertion and her desire as the fiduciary to challenge that, and her desire as the fiduciary to resume her role as the fiduciary. I think that's a fair reading of that document, and particularly because it came in response to her notice as the fiduciary. I note that in petitioner's response to the court's order, while she suggested that the matter should be considered as an appeal of the November 2018 decision to appoint a new fiduciary, the pleading pointed to no document that was an NOD. And so our view was that if she didn't view it as an NOD and bring that to the court as suggested that it is an NOD, then That's simply an issue that's now being, you know, accept. Mr. Rosinsky then said, yes, sure, view it as an NOD. And that's would be the first time we've heard that from petitioner. So we think that it's. Yes, Your Honor.
Chief, if it's okay. So it sounds like you're saying that this is the first time you've heard that the petitioner is asserting that she tried to appeal as the guardian the 2018 decision to appoint a paid fiduciary. And I just point you to her November 4th, 2022 response, where VA in the prior responses said that she did not initiate an appeal prior to coming to the court, and she explicitly disputed that contention and submitted a copy as attachment A of the November 29, 2018 letter from her other attorney saying that he was the attorney for the guardianship of the veteran and was responding to the November 2018 letter and expressing disagreement with it. So did she not, as a pro se petitioner, do enough to raise the issue that she was contending that she has filed an NOD as the guardian with that 2018 decision to appoint a paid fiduciary?
Well, I understand your point, Your Honor. And I mean, I certainly, it's not clear what she's meant. I took her previous assertion to mean that she, as the fiduciary, appealed the misuse determination rather than appealed the appointment of a new fiduciary in January 2018. Now, you know, we can see that there are different ways to read this document. You know, we just only point out that, you know, through counsel in her response to the court's order, while she suggested that this matter be considered an appeal of the November 2018 decision to appoint a new fiduciary, she did not point through counsel to this document as an NOD. So our response was simply that, well, if she files one, certainly the agency would need to consider it. And if she explains to the agency her view in the first instance that this, you know, for the first time, that this should serve and or was, you know, somehow should be read or was intended as an NOD to that decision to appoint a new fiduciary, then the agency would act on it accordingly and would make fact findings in the first instance about the NOD and then would proceed accordingly if it was accepted as one to issue a statement of the case, as this would be a legacy matter.
If I can just follow up on that, Chief, the November 2018 letter that did not actually go to the petitioner as well as guardian, it told the veteran that he could file an NOD by submitting a letter. So are you conceding that a letter is good enough? It doesn't have to be on any standardized form. And could you let us know, is there even a standardized form for appealing a fiduciary issue?
Yes, Your Honor. As to the former, we would concede that a letter would be sufficient in response to that notice. Your Honor, I'm sorry, I don't have the answer to whether there is an NOD that is specialized for this purpose or whether they would now send a standard NOD form. But one was not sent in this case to the veteran. And in fact, as you note, the notice simply indicated that a response with a letter to expressing disagreement with the appointment of the new fiduciary would initiate an appeal.
Why didn't the letter that was sent initiate an appeal? It just seems irrational to hold to the position that no NOD was submitted, given that a letter was submitted and it expressed disagreement.
Yes, Your Honor. It's I guess a question again of that she was acting in two roles and had different received different decisions, should have received them both, but did receive different decisions, had different rights in her two roles. And this was read as responding to her to the letter that went to her as the fiduciary and her response in the role as a fiduciary. And so as I understand
it, did it ever notify her about acting as pro se? I thought she had the American Legion as her representative, but she's essentially pro se down below. Was she notified of the different obligations incumbent on her as an individual who was wearing two hats, both as the veteran's legal guardian and as the veteran's dependent?
Your Honor, two responses to that. The first is, I don't know that she was acting pro se. This letter that was submitted was drafted by counsel. So she wasn't acting as pro se at the time she submitted this letter.
But you're not saying that. I don't know. I was not under the impression that the lawyer who was representing her had been approved as a representative by VA. And I thought I saw the American Legion listed as her representative for VA matters.
Your Honor, the veterans representative for VA matters was the American Legion, and the American Legion was copied on his copy of the notice letter that provided appellate rights. Where we concede error is that the other copy of that letter that did have the appellate rights for the veteran was sent to the veteran's domicile and instead of to the guardian. And that's an error that we concede led to the confusion. Your question was she given her explanation of her two different roles? And the answer is that she should have been via receiving two different letters. That is, she received a letter as the fiduciary, which she did receive, and I believe she responded to through this November 29th, 2018 letter of counsel. And then she should have also received a separate letter on behalf of the veteran, that's the veteran's copy, as the guardian, that would have explained the veteran's rights to appeal the appointment.
But she didn't receive either of those herself.
No, Your Honor. I believe she did receive, the letter, November 29th, 2018 letter from counsel says, I write in response to your letter of November 1st, 2018, stating that she'd been replaced as representative payee. And so that's, she did receive that letter, and that was the letter that went to her as the fiduciary. And so it did not explain her rights to appeal on behalf of the veteran. It explained her rights to contest the misuse determination, which she did do, and then ultimately succeeded in that regard. But so there would have been two letters that were sent. Both should have, one copy of both should have gone to Ms. Charette. One copy did go, that is in her hat as the fiduciary, and she responded to that. In our view, the copy that should have gone to her for the veteran, we concede, is the one that there's no indication, you know, that the indications are that it was sent to his domicile and to his service organization, which that was American Legion.
Well, thanks for clearing that up. In response to the questions that Judge Meredith and I have been asking, the Secretary will not concede that the letter that was sent in response to the November letter is an NOD as to the appointment of a fiduciary.
Your Honor, we believe it's possible to read it a number of ways. As noted by Judge Meredith, the initial sentence says it was the attorney for the guardianship, but the remainder of the context and the fact that it was in response to the letter to her as the fiduciary, it appears to be, I mean, it simply writes that I write in response to your letter of November 1st, 2018, and that letter that was sent to, you know, unfortunately, because she did not receive the two letters, the letter that was sent to her and that they're expressing a response to is wearing her hat as the fiduciary and for about her replacement and about misuse. So
your answer is no.
The Secretary
will not concede.
Yes, Your Honor. It's not that we wouldn't concede it. However, I would suggest that, again, petitioner has never pointed to this document as the NOD. And if he did so to the agency, that the agency would, in the first instance, then review the document in light of that assertion for the first time that this document should be read that way. And that it would and you know should be allowed the opportunity to act accordingly.
Uh-huh. And so when there's no form given and the veteran writes a letter expressing disagreement, the veteran also has to later point to that letter of disagreement as an NOD before VA will recognize it. VA cannot recognize it on its own. as having expressed disagreement?
No, Your Honor. That, of course, when it was received by the AOJ, they certainly, they were tasked with reading it and figuring out who it's from and what it's for. And they in this case did act on it, but they read it as coming from her as the former fiduciary contesting the misuse determination and her replacement, which she was not otherwise empowered to contest. However, I mean, I certainly understand that it can be read more than one way, and what would flow from that if it were an NOD would be that she's owed a statement of the case on the issue of the appointment of a new fiduciary and the reasons that would, in the view of the AOJ, be in the best interest of the veteran. Whether the court construed it as an NOD or whether she, asked the agency to look at it as an NOD and they responded accordingly, then if it were deemed one in either case, an SOC would be owed, and that would be the next step in her right to appeal, which we, in our pleading, conceded. As the guardian, she has a right to initiate on behalf of the veteran an appeal of the appointment of fiduciary under 13600 and Freeman. And given that counsel had not pointed to any document as an NOD, we certainly didn't, we did not see that there had been one, and so suggested that given the nature of the notice mismailing, what appears to be a mismailing of the notice, that certainly a new NOD would still, be reviewed in light of that mailing.
Mr. McNabb, is the Secretary willing to see that the court would be right to liberally construe that November 2018 letter in light of the fact that, as the Secretary's already conceded, Mrs. Charette should have received, as Mr. Charette's guardian, at least a copy of the notice that was provided to Mr. Charette, which specifically addressed the issue of being able to contest appeal via a notice of decision, or a notice of disagreement, rather, about the decision to move his prior fiduciary and appoint a new fiduciary.
Yes, Your Honor. This court, the court's prior case law has indicated the question of whether an NOD is an NOD is a matter the court can look at in the first instance. It doesn't always choose to do so, particularly in cases where the agency's not reviewed that document for that purpose in the first instance. So we would suggest that would be appropriate, that the agency would in the first instance review the document in light of an assertion that it's an NOD. However, we also concede that, the court certainly, can follow its precedent and consider the question of whether documents an NOD in the first instance.
Thank you.
Mr. McNabb, I wanted to touch on another issue that was particularly disturbing in looking at this file. So you VA has a regulation, 38 CFR 13.100, subsection E1, I believe, that basically says that when a beneficiary has a legal guardian, then VA will presume that the beneficiary doesn't have the capacity to state preferences as far as who they want their fiduciary to be. Was that regulation followed in this case?
I have no reason to believe it wasn't, Your Honor, because, while they did gather information from the veteran, I have no basis to know that the decision made to appoint a new fiduciary was on any basis other than the initial finding of misuse. However, if the veteran via his guardian does appeal the appointment, then naturally we would have a statement of the case that would explain in greater detail than the initial letter, which didn't really give any detail that would explain.
We do have a document, I believe it's from a from Mr. Chouret, apparently, and a licensed clinical social worker that basically was used as evidence in this case of the veteran's preference for who he wanted the fiduciary to be. So I'll just ask the question again. Was the regulation 13.100E1 followed in this case?
Your Honor, again, I have no reason to believe it wasn't. The only thing that we know about the November 1st, 2018 appointment of a new fiduciary is what the letter tells us, right? And that does not express that any that they took any the veteran's opinion on the matter into account. It doesn't really tell us much at all. But, you know, the what evidence can be weighed and how it would be weighed is something that it's really downstream from where we are, which is that if there is an appeal, then obviously the statement of case should explain why the best interest of the veteran is served by one thing or another. And if the veteran disagrees with that outcome, then an appeal to the board of the appointment of the new fiduciary is within his rights, and that Ms. Charette can speak for him and file such an appeal. And then ultimately that would...
The regulation says that VA will presume that the veteran does not have the capacity to state a preference. And in this case, we have a document asking the veteran who has been in a secure lockdown nursing facility for, well, now it's been since 2008, so it's quite a while, asking him what his preference is. Why would VA do that if there is a presumption that the veteran does not have the capacity to state a preference?
Well, Your Honor, first off, I don't know the answer to that question, why they would ask, although I have no idea if asking that question would give them information that would allow that presumption to be rebutted. I honestly couldn't say. I can say that we have no basis to believe that that was part of the decision-making of the agency in November 2018, and that's the decision that if it is appealed or deemed appealed, that, you know, would then move forward.
I would hope that going forward, VA employees would recognize that a veteran with a legal guardian who is not capable of being on his own, to the extent that he requires a facility that's locked down, secure, so that he does not leave, that VA would recognize that, including licensed clinical social workers, would not ask the veteran's preference as to these matters. I think it's absolutely unconscionable what appears to have occurred here.
Thank you, Your Honor.
If I could, sorry.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you have a response further to the chief?
I have no further response, Your Honor, beyond, you know, that I know no more about the basis of the November 1st, 2018 appointment decision than what appears in the appointment, I mean, in the letter that explained that decision.
I'd like to follow up on a couple of issues that we touched on with the petitioner's counsel. One of them is that the petitioner has submitted some evidence that she used to receive about $3,200 a month out of the veterans benefits to help support her as a dependent. And it seems throughout the pleadings that we have, she's made a number of requests to VA to look into that issue. Has VA done anything to look into that issue? And can you tell us whether she is currently receiving any support out of the veterans benefits?
I'm unaware, Your Honor, of whether she receives any support out of the veterans VA benefits. I believe the petitioner's response in August of 2022, attachment F of one of the petitioner's responses included a letter from the VA fiduciary hub to Ms. Charette dated in August of 2022. And it says, in the second paragraph, per VA policy, such a request to change a fiduciary must come from the veteran, as a spouse can't submit that request. I'm sorry, I'm reading from the wrong paragraph. In the third paragraph, it says the Indianapolis Fiduciary Hub also confirmed that Mrs. Shorat was in receipt of the veteran's other income, including military retirement pay, his Social Security benefit, and other pensions totaling over $6,000 monthly. The current fiduciary reported he has not had any requests from the spouse for home repairs or other needs. That letter from the Indianapolis Fiduciary Hub to Ms. Shorat in August of 2022 is really the extent of what I know.
Okay, but you acknowledge that the record has a number of different letters where she's asked VA to look into the matter of why she's no longer receiving support as a dependent of the veteran.
That's correct, Your Honor. I'm sorry, my apologies. I'm not aware of the timeline of how that fits in with this response or what is the most recent sort of state with respect to that issue.
Okay, let me follow up on one other issue. The petitioner, before she had current counsel, filed a motion for an injunction, essentially claiming that someone other than her, who is legal guardian of the veteran, has been filing disability claims on behalf of the veteran. Do you have any additional information for us on that topic? Has someone other than the guardian been filing claims on the veteran's behalf?
I have nothing further on that, Your Honor, other than I understand we opposed that motion in October of 2022, and I'm unaware of any change from our response there. But beyond that, I have no further information on that question.
So my final question would be a follow-up on what the Chief Judge started with at the beginning. VA here has acknowledged that this entire string of events was started by false accusations against the petitioner that VA has since acknowledged were false. They removed her as the petitioner. It's led to about 5 years of litigation. Are you aware of any reasons other than the allegations of misuse, which are turned out to be untrue, as to why Mrs. Shorat is not an appropriate fiduciary for her husband?
Your Honor, I'm not, but that's, you know, I've also not been, you know, I'm by no means a fact finder. And that would be, you know, if there was an appeal of the appointment, and the AOJ then would review the matter and would reaffirm in an SOC a best use determination.
And so that's where I get back to the question that the chief asked at the beginning, and I'm not sure we got a clear answer on. Does VA not have authority to sua sponte, essentially fix a mistake? If you removed her under false accusations, does VA not have a process for sua sponte fixing the mistake on your own without her having to go through, a long appeal process?
Your Honor, I believe the fiduciary hub manager can appoint a new fiduciary if they find a reason to. Again, absent an action of either removing or appointing, those matters aren't appealable to the board. And so if the question is the jurisdiction of the court and the board, that would flow through an appointment action or a removal or a misuse determination that is appealed by the beneficiary and not by the fiduciary.
Chief, did you want to jump in there?
You keep talking about these different hats that petitioner is wearing. And I know I asked you before, like, how is she supposed to know that she's wearing these different hats and what's incumbent on her under each hat to do? Like, you keep making these fine distinctions that, quite frankly, I think even the people on this call who have quite a bit of legal experience have difficulty discerning the different kinds of things that she is supposed to be doing. And let's add 4 more minutes.
Thank you.
Your answer there just kind of stymied me. That's pretty complicated, especially for someone who is acting pro se down below.
Yes, Your Honor, but I'm sorry if I stymied you, because my answer was that she should have received two letters that explained in each letter her rights with each hat. So as the fiduciary, she did receive a letter that she, if she wanted to challenge a misuse, et cetera, she could do so. It did not give her appellate rights to the board because she doesn't have any as a fiduciary. And so that's the letter she did receive and that she did respond to in the November 29th, 2018 letter through counsel that says we're responding to your November 1st letter. So she received the letter about that hat. She did not receive the letter she should have received. We concede that is for the veteran. And so when she's acting for the veteran, as opposed to acting for herself as the former fiduciary.
I don't have it in front of me right now. The letters that you are characterizing, she received one in the capacity as a fiduciary. She should have received the other in another capacity. Do they have like block print at the top that indicate to her in what capacity she is receiving the letter?
Yes, Your Honor. They don't have it in that way, but the letter that she should have received on behalf of the veteran explains that this letter is to inform you that a fiduciary has been appointed to manage your VA funds. And so she should have received that letter along with the appellate rights that come with that letter to whatever address she requested as the guardian. But that is the veteran's letter explaining to him that a new fiduciary has been appointed for him to manage his funds and explaining to him what he should do if he disagrees with that appointment. That's the letter that we concede was not appropriately sent. And then the other one is the one she did receive and apparently respond to. And that is to her as the fiduciary. And it explains, you know, you need to provide an accounting. You need to, the things they talk about are things that are for the fiduciary, not for the veteran. You need to provide an accounting. You need to turn the funds over, et cetera. So
you're saying, so you have to look at the text of the letter and discern which role, or is there something in the address block that characterizes this as one or the other?
Right. Well, Your Honor, I apologize because unfortunately it was not appropriately mailed. And so in this case, it says this is Charles Charette, right? And that's what I don't know is that whether an appropriate sending would have said to Charles Charette, care of guardian Karen Charette, you know, versus the other one, which was to Karen Charette and explained her rights as the fiduciary. So I apologize. I don't know what their, you know, what the standard procedure of how it would be captioned. If it would be captioned in a way that is helpful in clarifying that you're receiving two letters with two different explanations of what's happened and two different explanations of what you can do in response, because in essence, there's two different one use the veteran in this case, and who's the only one that has appellate rights. In conclusion, I would say that in terms of whether there's a process for, a request to be made for an appointment of a successor fiduciary by in this case, the guardian for speaking on behalf of the veteran, we would note that there is, you know, such a provision. It's simply not something that leads to an appealable decision, but it is something that under 1330B9 is an option for a beneficiary to request a change in fiduciaries. And so, Your Honor, if there are no further questions, we would respectfully request that the court deny the petition. And if it's the view of the Ms. Charette that the November 2018 document should be read as a notice of disagreement, that would be the first time she's expressed that. And we would suggest that the agency could respond to such an assertion if she makes it to the agency in the first instance. And then, of course, whatever its view on that matter would be, is a reviewable matter that's reviewable by the board and ultimately the court. So the court's jurisdiction over these questions is not frustrated in that regard. Thank you, Your Honor.
Judge Meredith, do you have further questions?
I do not. Thank you.
And Judge Lahrer?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McNabb. And Mr. Rosinski, you may move ahead with rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. What I heard, and I asked the court to put in its opinion, is that the secretary now recognizes state court appointments of guardians and that they have rights under the VA fiduciary program. That is news to me. I have repeatedly been told in writing and otherwise that the VA does not have to recognize and does not recognize in many of the cases I've cited to the court that guardians have, state-appointed guardians have any rights within the VA system. This two-hat dance that we're talking about is really hide the ball. They put the ball under one hat when it's convenient, and they put the ball under the other hat when it's convenient. And now all of a sudden, the two hats, a woman whose husband is 800 miles away and been fighting and sending letters is suddenly supposed to parse the address of a letter to find out which legal rights she is representing or has. And then whenever she tries to get it clarified, they tell her, we're not talking to you because you're not the fiduciary. Where's the second hat? Well, that's the ball's under the other hat now. Even in their filings, this is a litigation position that needs to be put down in a precedential decision because their first response to the petition says exactly the opposite. Only the veteran can apply. And they do violate the regulation that the chief judge mentioned because they use the veteran's opinion as a basis, as an actual factual basis for their appointment and their refusal to consider reinstatement. I also call the court's attention to 38 USC 5502B, which directs that whenever it appears that any fiduciary, in the opinion of the secretary, which is a guardian, is not fulfilling their duties, they're supposed to go to state court because those are the rights that the secretary wants to restrict. It says it right there. They have never done that. They didn't do it here. They thought wrongly, but they have all these documents charging her with misuse. They have a duty never exercised to report this court-appointed fiduciary to the court that appointed her. And in my opinion, they don't because they don't have the evidence most of the time. They certainly didn't have it here until threatened with the attorney who step by step showed that they had exceeded their issues. Now, that's, you know, they didn't send a second letter, this magic second letter, because they never send the second letter because they don't recognize state court authority. The second letter gives recognition to state court authority, in which has never been done before. That's why it wasn't sent. Okay? And if it was supposed to say that, that's what it should have said. And in any event, all the subsequent communications show they always have, she's always wearing the wrong hat. She's the ex-fiduciary. They never tell her information as the spouse or as the court appointed. It's because their people do not recognize the state court appointments. That is, it's a cold reading. It's not a veteran friendly reading. And even as you said, Your Honor, it's hard for me to parse through this now. Who said what? What hat am I wearing? Do you really think the fiduciary people are doing that? That's what is supposed to happen. That is why Ms. Charette submits that to get to her details of what letter meant what, you have to go up a step. Resist that urge to narrow this case, to define the process that was supposed to happen. Because right now, we've got a litigating position that is directly contrary to what happened here. And it's not the first time. But to resolve the issues, you have to know what the issues are and which one is the right answer. Now, returning to the issue of the NODs, it's not for me or anyone else to tell the VA, hey, go look at this. We can, but it's not necessarily our legal duty. It's their legal duty to interpret this and make a decision that it's late filed, all this stuff. Go back and look at the documents. And again, let's not please let's not forget that regardless of whether that was an NOD or not, about that specific issue, they have never issued a properly processed, properly noticed decision on the repeated request for reinstatement. Once that decision is made, which I submit the court has jurisdiction to order, because if they issue a proper decision and we disagree with it, you will have jurisdiction to hear it after the board decides on it. That is the critical point here, because that decision will have to review all the errors made by VA. And just to be clear, the result of the baseless, conceded, erroneous misuse charge that still continue today. She's lost control of the vet's finances. They refuse to give her any information about what the new fiduciary is doing. They refuse to allow the vet transfer to the VA facility in Florida. So he remains 759 miles one way trip from her spouse, even though they were arranging transfer when this happened. The medical treatment and lifestyle choices is whatever the VA person says. She has no input. Whether he eats 7 hamburgers a day or he gets Dockers, which is ridiculous on its face, she doesn't even get to decide that anymore. She's cut off from all the other information regarding her spouse because they won't answer the phone because she has a misuse pending in the system. And she is drawing down her savings to live in a home 500 miles from her spouse with her children because they won't pay her. She has Social Security and retirement. Why do we need to give her VA money? Because it's the law. And that's the kind of actions that this court needs to look at from a higher level. Why do they think they can do this? Because they do. And until we get to the core of why they think they can do these things. And the court raised one I hadn't thought about. I knew it was wrong, but there is a regulation. You can't ask an incompetent man and provide evidence to prove whatever the VA person wants. The records replete, even the few documents we have, because we don't have the fiduciary file. They won't give it. This man has been long time unable to make decisions. If all they're going to do is say, hey, he wants more money, give it to him or we fire you, why do we have a fiduciary? Just let the VA fiduciary person decide everything, cut out a layer. And if they're going to listen to him, why do we even have a fiduciary? These are the problems. The two hat example is a perfect segue for all of this. They play hide the ball and they won't listen to us. They haven't listened to a spouse until now. All of a sudden she's got two hats. They wouldn't listen to either hat until this case got before this panel. The chronology, I refer you again, write a chronology. It's cart before the horse. It's not even cart before the horse. It's road before the cart. They took away her money. They took away all these things. Then they decided a year later that there was misuse, which a year after that, after the attorney pointed out all the factual mistakes, including allegations that the person making the allegations had no way of even knowing. How does the staffer know about Mrs. Charette's personal finances? She didn't. They created that out of whole cloth. If you look at the scenario that went from hamburgers and pants to stealing the veterans' money, okay? And that is all the way it works. You cannot fix this case, we submit, respectfully, without addressing the programmatic issues, because the veterans deserve better. The most vulnerable veterans are mistreated here. The veterans who can fight for themselves seem, in my experience, seem to get better treatment from the VA fiduciary people. It's when spouses try to enforce some discipline on people who are bucking against it. I'd like to have 7 cheeseburgers too. That's why there is a court appointed, a state court appointed. So we need, as a minimum, a definitive statement of what those hats are and when those hats apply, because they're not applied until it's too late. I thank you.
Chief, you're on mute.
Thank you, Judge Meredith. Thank you, Mr. Rosinsky. And the court thanks both parties for their arguments. And the case is submitted for consideration.
And the court is in recess.